Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today we take Route 51 to the Highway 10 exit in Stevens Point to a nondescript single-story building housing a private nonprofit corporation. We will soon find that the appearance of this modest-looking structure is deceptive because as we enter the front door of CAP Services, we are stepping onto the front line of a regional war on poverty that's giving another chance to people in need in Portage, Wapaka, Washera, Marquette, Outagamie, and portions of Marathon and Wood Counties. Since 1976, one man has been leading this organization, and this fall, he announced his retirement, stepping down after 32 years as chief executive officer. And he's joining us today, Carl Espinazik of CAP Services. For the next hour, we're going to talk to Carl about the past, the public-private partnerships he pioneered over the past three decades, and the innovative approaches to problem-solving that have been hallmarks of his tenure. We'll also ask him about the present, about how the current economic climate is making a bad situation even worse for some of his clients. And we'll talk to him about the future, the challenges and opportunities facing the new Obama administration in Washington, and what that may mean for those of us who live in North Central Wisconsin. Maybe you've been touched by CAP Services or helped out by one of their programs. Maybe you've got your own observations or questions about the regional impact of an economy in crisis and the hopes of a new administration in Washington. Maybe you'd just like to call and wish Carl a happy retirement. Regardless, we want to hear from you. Please give us a call at 261-6371. That's 261-6371, or toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Carl Espinazik, welcome back to Route 51. Good to have you with us, and congratulations.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell us, for those who aren't familiar with CAP Services, what exactly is it?
Well, in 1964, President Johnson launched what he called the War on Poverty. One of the elements of that was the creation of 800 community action agencies nationwide. The community action agencies were at that time defined as private nonprofits who would identify local needs and mobilize the resources necessary to address those poverty needs. Eventually, about 150 of them became public agencies, but the other 650 are still private nonprofits. We've evolved over the years just as the economy has changed, just as society has changed. When we first started as a community action agency, we primarily tried to link up people to all the new federal programs. And a lot of people don't realize food stamps didn't exist before the 1960s. There was commodity programs, but there wasn't food stamps. Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, didn't exist before the 1960s. Formal employment and training programs had been ended during World War II and had never been restarted. So there are a lot of new programs that came out. Community action agencies were initially focused on getting those people hooked into those services. Then in the 1970s, the community action agencies began offering some of those programs themselves, fuel assistance, weatherization. They began offering those services as well as continuing to hook people up to services offered by the state or federal governments. In 1981, we went through a catharsis with the Reagan Revolution. The Reagan recession and the Reagan Revolution caused us to lose a third of our revenues from September 30th, 1981 to October 1st.
Were those outright cuts from the government, or was that because of some of the other implications of the economic downturn?
No, that was primarily the Reagan administration proposed and Congress disposed, and we literally lost a third of our funding. So we went through this catharsis, and we thought about what our future was. Do we really need an anti-poverty agency was one of the questions. If so, what should we be doing, and how should we be doing it? And we came upon a great truth, and that is you can hook people up to resources, but the reality is until they have a living wage job, access to affordable health insurance, and affordable housing, you really haven't helped them very much. You can give them emergency food. You can give them emergency shelter. You can give them emergency food assistance and fuel assistance, and they're still going to be poor. So we decided at that point to redefine ourselves. We were not going to be just a typical community action agency. We were truly going to be an anti-poverty agency that measured our success in terms of the number of people we moved out of poverty every year.
Was CAP Services in Stevens Point unique in redefining itself that way, or were other community action agencies across the country forced to do the same?
Well, over the last 20 years, people have, a number of us have redefined ourselves. I would say probably 20 to 25% of the community action agencies throughout the country have adopted this. Now, remember, these decisions are made by local boards. They're not made by the feds. They're not made by the state. They're made by local boards. And, I've been a little bit of a messiah on this issue, going out and preaching to the choir, but, no, not the choir, but preaching to the congregations. And we've actually been able to make that transition. We're still working on it. It's always a work in progress, but, our community action agency gave up a lot of programs like the emergency fuel program. We don't run that program. We'll weatherize your house so you can reduce your energy consumption so you have more money to spend for medicine and food, but we won't just give you money and say, here, spend it for fuel. We don't do emergency food. We don't do emergency shelter, other than if you're a domestic violence victim. So, we've changed the focus of the organization, and I think it's to the betterment of the communities in which we live.
What do you do if you don't do all of those other things?
Well, we have a workforce development program, which takes the working poor, who complained to us for years that they couldn't continue to work and get training because they weren't eligible for any dollars because they only were going to training part-time, yet they wanted to be able to acquire the skills to compete for living wage jobs. So we set up a program, completely privately funded, I might add, that helps low-income people access the training that they need, provides them with childcare so they can attend the training, helps them pay for their books, and as a result, those people who graduate from our program increase their income by more than $11,000 annually, plus 75% of them have access to private health insurance.
You know, it almost sounds like the old biblical admonition, the difference between giving somebody a fish and teaching them how to fish.
Well, let me tell you, it's even more than that, because you can teach them how to fish, you can give them a fish, but if there's no fish in the lake, you got to put some fish in.
You got to stock the lake.
And that's what we are doing now with our business development program, is we help businesses create jobs that are living wage. And because, especially in this economic environment, a lot of businesses are having difficulty accessing capital, and yet they have good ideas, but the deals are being left on the table by the banks. As a result, we've been expanding our lending, so that the last 2 years we've set a record both years.
You know, Carl, just get into this a little bit more, conservatives and Republicans have often traditionally run against government. Reagan's famous one-liner was that government isn't the solution, it's the problem. Has that philosophy, you think, run its course with this last election? Barack Obama says he wants to make government and public service cool again. Do you think he'll succeed?
Well, I think there's a happy medium between government is big brother and government is nothing but picking up the garbage and defending the shores. And I think that's where we're moving back to the middle. For the last 8 years, we've been getting government workers have been getting bashed. Government programs have been getting bashed. There's been no objective review of the programs that are out there to see what works and what doesn't work. Either you defend it all or you attack it all. And there's people like Congressman Petri, who's a moderate Republican, has looked at our programs, has been to our shop, and as a result has become a very strong supporter of our organization. And when you look at Congressman Petri, you can say, hey, he's probably the typical Republican. You know, it's only the crazy right-wingers that are saying, oh, you guys, it's a waste of government money. We fought the war on poverty and poverty won. Well, that's not true. I have literally thousands of families that we can put, on a list and say these people have all moved out of poverty because of the efforts of CAP Services and the people in our community.
Poverty is still a problem in central Wisconsin.
It is, and it's getting bigger, and it's more insidious than ever because it's affecting more and more children. And if children are poor, there's all kinds of outcomes that we don't like. They can't get access to adequate dental care. They can't get access, in many cases, to adequate medical care. They don't get enough to eat. They don't graduate from high school at the same rate as non-low-income people. They have less access to college. They're more likely to be drug abusers. You know, if you only give people bad choices, don't be surprised if they make a bad choice. And what we have to do is make sure that people have choices. They take responsibility for those choices, but that they have choices that say, okay, if you go down this path, this is what you're going to encounter. And if you go down this path, this is what you're going to encounter. And help them overcome those barriers that we all face. But in the end, we know which path is the path to self-sufficiency, and that's primarily education, good health, good housing.
Carl Panasik, retiring after 32 years as CEO of CAP Services, a community action agency based in Stevens Point, but with programs and with solutions for people all across central Wisconsin. If you know Carl and you'd like to congratulate him on his retirement, or if you've got questions about some of the approaches, the really pioneering problem-solving approaches to poverty that his organization has been involved with, give us a call at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, formerly Fiserv Health, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. Our guest this evening, Carl Panasik, who's retiring after 32 years of service with CAP Services of Stevens Point. Those phone numbers again, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Carl, many of your clients are not doing very well even in the best of times. These are not the best of times. They're the worst of times. How has the economic downturn affected the people that depend on you for services?
Well, obviously the poverty rate is up throughout central Wisconsin. And what we're seeing at our organization is longer and longer waiting lists. In the past, as an example, we would have a 1 or 2 month waiting list for our skills program. Now the waiting list, depending on the county you live in, can be 3, 4, or 5 months. In some cases, almost a year. So we're seeing longer waiting lists. The second thing is that we're seeing is usage at our domestic violence shelter is increasing, and that's not surprising. So often the economics of a family situation determine when the mother is willing to leave, the victim is willing to leave, and things are getting...
If she can't get a job or she has no recourse outside of an abusive situation, chances are she's going to be forced to stay there.
And we're even though we're busier than ever, we also have more people coming into our office just to talk about their problem of domestic abuse. You know, people feel frustrated, and sometimes if a man loses a job or the abuser loses the job, the only power that they have is the power over their family, and then that becomes an abusive kind of situation. So we've seen increases in that as well. If you talk to any of the emergency food pantries or the fuel assistance office, there's a historic waiting lists for historic numbers of people that are trying to get into those programs. The other thing is we're now starting to see more activity on the elderly side. As you're probably aware, Glenn, in 1964, the elderly were the poorest segment of American society. In 2008, the elderly rate is rapidly approaching that of families. Children are still the poorest population segment of the poverty population, but the elderly are starting to emerge again. And that's primarily because interest rates have been at a historic low for about the last 7-8 years.
Right.
And so a lot of the elderly that in the past were getting 5 and 6% on their $10,000 savings bond or $20,000 CD are now only getting 3%. Their fixed costs are going up. Fuel, electricity, gasoline for them to drive.
Seems like a lot of those things that are really the necessities of life are going up faster than the rate of inflation in general.
And that's absolutely true. You know, when they announced the inflation rate last month on the core values or the core index is 3%, but in gasoline and energy, which is exempt from that, it's 5% or 6%. The elderly did get a decent increase in their Social Security for this year, but it's still not going to keep up with the increases in fuel costs.
What areas, what geographic areas have been hardest hit in central Wisconsin?
Well, those counties that don't have a mix of economy. Portage is an example. It's got a real nice mix. They've got some of the paper industry still there. Century Insurance has been doing okay. We've got the university. And then we have a number of large employers. So that's been, we have not been hit as hard. Although where we are seeing the problem is not in job loss, but is in wage erosion, earning power erosion. More than 43% of the people in Portage County today earn less than they did in 2000, adjusted for inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't, that's a deteriorating standard of living, and that creates all kinds of issues for people. 50% of the workers nationwide have lost earning power. Now, Portage County is a little bit better, we're at 43, but 50% of the workers nationwide have lost earning power since 2000. So I think that's a problem. But in Washera County, where there's no manufacturing, no headquarters of any big insurance companies, there's not a university, they're seeing big problems. I mean, they're seeing a higher unemployment rate. They're seeing a big drop in earned income. That county is the fifth oldest county as far as average age in the state. So those elderly folks aren't keeping as much. Even the ones that had money or had some stock, they're seeing the value of the stock go down. No dividends this year, that kind of thing.
I want to focus just for a second on Washera County and one community that you really helped, the community of Watoma, with a very innovative project. Several years ago, you had an old school building that was falling apart and was a hangout for people who were less than desirable, shall we say. It was on top of a brownfield site. You had environmental contamination. You had a problem with not enough low-income housing. You had a problem with people not being able to get work. And somehow, CAP Services was able to take all of these problems and put it together like a Rubik's Cube. You demolished the building, you cleaned up the environment, and now where all of that stood, you have row after row after row of very attractive, nice, low to middle income housing that's within walking distance of a place where a lot of folks are able to work, a bookbinding factory. How did you do all of that?
Well, so people said, oh, you must have had a dream. I said, no, I had a nightmare. It really started when the Speed Queen company closed their doors in the 1980s and basically abandoned two buildings in downtown Watoma. We approached the Speed Queen company about donating one of the buildings, and I can still remember we went in to meet with the president of Speed Queen, who was down in Ripon, and he thought we were going to make an offer to purchase the building because it had been on the market for 6 years. And we introduced ourselves, and he said, well, how much are you willing to offer us? And I said, well, we're going to give you the opportunity to give that building to us. And what did you say? I said, we're going to give you the opportunity to donate the building to for our use. And we walked through the tax advantages that would accrue to him as a result, accrue to their company as a result, and then talked about the community good and social good that it could generate. And they gave us the first building. They didn't give us the second. They charged us for the second, but they still gave us a pretty good deal on it. Well, that was we turned the old Speed Queen building into a business incubator, and it was also the home of we moved Fox Valley Technical College in there. We moved the job center in there, and we put a bunch of CAP offices in there. That started generating some activity because we had the biggest building in town. We had the biggest conference room in town, and a lot of people were using our facility for that. Then the mayor of Watoma called me, Lester Van Loon was his name, and,
colorful character.
Yeah, well, a very colorful character with that name. Everybody always thought of Professor Van Loon, which is Donald Duck's uncle,
yeah.
But, Lester called me and he goes, Carl, what are you going to do about that abandoned school that's a block away from you? And I said, what abandoned school? He goes, in Watoma. I go, I know the Lester. I said, well, why do you think this is my problem? He goes, because I'm making it your problem. So Lester worked with us to set up a TIF district, the first TIF district in Washera County. We knocked the building down using TIF proceeds and put in streets, sewer, water. And then we built the first new single-family house that had been built in that community in 10 years, from 1988 to 1998. There, 10 years it went.
And now you've got a whole housing development.
The whole subdivision,
there, subdivision?
Is filled. There's transitional housing for victims of domestic violence. There's middle and there's affordable housing for middle and low-income people. There's some housing for people with special needs. And we've taken that model, and we're now doing it about a mile away in another subdivision.
And, again, it's within walking distance of a place where particularly those with special needs are able to get employment, this bookbinding factory.
Then they can go to work there. There's a vitamin factory that's down there that's always looking for help. And there's Cummings Engine, which is in the industrial park about a mile away. And they're, you know, always looking for welders and engineers. So, it really has turned into an amazing, project. And
what has it meant for the community of Wautoma in terms of what that community looks like, the kind of tax revenue they're generating? It's future, the optimism they must have for their future.
Well, I think they do. And it spun off, downtown Main Street program that, came together after we started making some improvements. The whole neighborhood, we've noticed that surrounding our subdivision, those owners, property owners, have made a difference. We've built more than 5% of the housing that's in Wautoma today. We built it.
That's a lot different than the typical cliche of the anti-poverty program of cutting somebody a check or giving them a basket full of money and telling them to go spend it.
And people, our projects are not percent of income. People pay a flat rent, so they know what their rent is. When they get an increase, they don't have to worry about paying a 30% tax to the federal government in lost benefits as a result of getting those
jobs.
And
you've got a good mix of people living in those
places. Yeah. I mean, we've got people with special needs. We've got a lot of single head of household families, and we have dual head household families.
Carl Panasek of CAP Services, he's retiring after 32 years. That project in Wautoma is an example of the kinds of things he has accomplished during his time with CAP Services, and we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Bemis Company, a global manufacturer of flexible packaging and pressure-sensitive materials, proud to support its employees and the communities in which they live. Information is available on the web at bemis.com.
We are back on Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, Carl Panasek, who is retiring after 32 years on the front lines of the war on poverty at CAP Services. This is a regional community action agency with its offices in Stevens Point. If you've got questions about the economic downturn, how it's affecting poor people, if you've got hopes for the future, if you'd like to talk to Carl about some of the innovative approaches to solving the problems of poverty that he's employed over the past three decades, please give us a call, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Carl, before the break, we were talking about the big change that you helped oversee in the city of Wautoma. But you've been involved in some other things which maybe not on that grand of scale have also produced some big results for some people in the communities you serve. There's a dental center in Stevens Point, for instance.
Right. CAP does a triennial needs assessment of low-income people, and for 10 assessments in a row, almost, no, I shouldn't say 10, 6 assessments in a row, 18-year period, we kept hearing from low-income people that they couldn't get access to dental care. They had a Medicaid card, but none of the dentists would accept the Medicaid card because of the low reimbursement rate. United Way of Portage County, St. Michael's Hospital, and Delta Dental all did similar surveys in about 7-8 years ago, and they all came up with similar results, which is that was one of the major problems facing low-income people. And what's especially bad about not getting access to dental care is Center for Disease Control estimates 30% of all lost personal time or sick time that employers give to their employees is dental related. And that's because if you have an infection in your tooth, it lowers your resistance. Reduces the white cell count and lowers your resistance to all other diseases, including heart disease. So it's got a long-term ramification. It goes just beyond the fact that your teeth don't look good.
Well, what amazes me is that we view your teeth and your mouth as somehow
not connected.
Not connected to the rest of your body, right. It's a medical problem. A medical problem is a medical problem.
Exactly. So what the three organizations put with United Way support said, we're going to do something about this. And we looked at all these different options. We looked at shipping people down to Wautoma where there's a federally qualified health clinic. But that was too expensive, for both from a gas point of view and from a lost time point of view, because if you shipped them down in a van, the first person got served had to wait till the last person got served before the van could leave. Then we looked at trying to beg, borrow, and steal services from local dentists. And they said that would help on a limited basis with children, but they didn't want to deal with the population as a whole. Finally, the three groups got together and just said, this is it. We got to do something. Let's start our own clinic. And let's start our own clinic because we can make our own rules. We don't have to rely on anybody else to tell us what to do, what not to do. We can run it the way we want to do. Well, 6 years later, we have a clinic that serves about 1,600 people every year. To give you an idea how successful it is, we have 1,500 people on the waiting list to get the services from us.
That's either a measure of how successful you are or how abysmal dental care is for people in need.
Let's say it's a combination of both, okay? The clinic's been evaluated by third parties and has come away with outstanding results. 92% of the people who get services there would recommend it to their family, which is usually that's the primo, good housekeeping seal of approval. We have a tremendous amount of money being invested by the United Ways, not only in Portage County, but Southwood County and Northwood County. We have a huge private sector support. We have now established an endowment to help support the dental center. And it's going to be something that's long term. It's going to be never self-sustaining completely, but in terms of being able to pay our bills with the existing donors that we have, we think we can do well.
And that kind of typifies your approach to a lot of these problems. You try to get something set up, which is you're not going to have to mess with it too much once it is set up. The money will continue to come in and sustain it for long-term viability.
You know, we don't want – if CAP Services was the corporate structure of CAP Services was eliminated tomorrow, we want all of our programs to be able to continue to operate. Now, that's a goal. That's never going to happen. But that's our goal. So the Family Crisis Center, if CAP Services wasn't there, could continue to exist.
Talk about the Family Crisis Center. As you said, you don't provide shelter for the poor, but you do provide shelter for domestic violence victims. Why the distinction?
Well, again, we go back to the needs assessment. In 1978, our needs assessment reported a lot of women were complaining because low-income women were complaining because they didn't have a place to go when they were being abused, and they had no ability to leave their husband because of the economics of the situation. So we started looking at the problem in cooperation with what was then called the Women's Resource Center at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, which, by the way, at that time was headed by the woman who's replacing me at the end of this year, Mary Patoka. So the circle has closed, so to speak. But anyway, we started looking at the situation, and what we found was there were no facilities, and there was no community sensitivity to the problem. Well, as we were doing this planning process, there were two very infamous murders in Portage County, one on the north side of Stevens Point and one, well, actually it was right across the county line in Iola, where women who had been abused and had a history of being abused both killed their husbands. And that sort of stimulated or catalyzed a lot of community discussion.
It's terrible that it takes something like that to produce the awareness that's necessary.
Well, you know, they
done.
Say that, I don't know if you ever saw that movie, The Burning Bed, where Farrah Fawcett, when she was right in the middle of that Charlie Angels run that she had, she played a woman who was abused, and she ended up burning her husband alive by setting the bed on fire when he was drunk and passed out. But anyway, that And they say that movie stimulated a lot of discussion.
Right. You know,
and
right.
The O.J. situation with Nicole Simpson, yeah. That also stimulated a big interest in domestic violence. And sometimes it takes that. I mean, it takes some sort of public outrage to do that. So we shelter victims of domestic violence. We run an abusers group so that the abusers have to go through a 16-week curriculum. The judges force them to do that, or else they're going to sentence them. They do a deferred prosecution agreement. Sometimes they are convicted, and it's a condition of probation and parole. But we deal with the abusers. We also have a support group for children. We also have expanded to include services to victims of sexual assault, because what we find is a lot of couples, it's not truly... It is domestic violence, but sexual assault is so much more than yeah. domestic violence. So we have a sexual assault victim services program as well.
Talk about the business assistance program that you set up in Portage County. Yeah, this is another feather in your cap.
Well, I tell you, it's a feather in the community's cap. We have been very fortunate in operating in communities and building community sensitivity and concern to a lot of different issues. But earlier we talked about, teach a man to fish and you don't have to give him anymore. And I said, well, wait a moment, you better make sure that he's fishing in a lake where there's some fish, or otherwise you gotta stock the lake. Well, that's what we do with our business assistance program. We help businesses create jobs that pay a living wage and provide health insurance in return for some subsidy from us. Now, often the subsidy is low-cost space in one of our business incubators or one of our custom-built lease purchase projects. Sometimes it's just individual technical assistance on a one-on-one basis, or it's a loan fund, a loan for equipment.
Yeah.
We find, businesses typically need three things to start up or expand: working capital, equipment, and a facility. That's what we try to do, is provide either a low-cost facility, we provide them a loan to buy a piece of equipment, or we give them the working capital, and I don't mean give, we loan them the working capital that they need, especially if you're manufacturing something, you have something in inventory that's being processed, there's a carrying cost, and a lot of times that carrying cost is what makes a business unprofitable.
Carl Panasek, retiring after 32 years of service with CAP Services in Stevens Point. We want to hear from you, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Dick in Three Lakes, you're on Route 51. Hello, Dick.
Hi, Carl. Dick Deaver calling.
Hi, how are you?
I just want to congratulate you on a wonderful career.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Hey. It's been a long time, but good to hear you, and good to hear that you're finishing up on a high note.
Dick, tell us how you know Carl, and tell us why he obviously means so much to you.
Well, Carl and I worked together back in the early 80s on a recycling program in Portage County, mainly Stevens Point, Whiting, and Plover. And it was an infancy program, and look where it's gone from there. So
yeah, that was it was called Interstate Recycling.
That's right.
It was St. Paul's Lutheran, CAP Services, the Boy Scouts. I can't remember the other groups.
Yeah, our Methodist Church in Plover.
Yep, that's right. And we used to take trucks out on Saturdays, and we'd pick up recycling. We said to people, if you put your recyclables out on Saturday, we'll come by and pick them up. It was all volunteers, no paid staff. No city vehicles or anything.
And that was at a time when a lot of communities weren't doing that.
Well, Stevens Point was one of the first programs to have a voluntary recycling program. And I can remember, we used to have a big, step van that we used, and, packed with newspapers and bottles. And then we took them down to the old city dump, and the city allowed us to have a, collection center there. And Dick was very active in the program, was one of the people who made that program what it was then and what it turned into now, which is one of the best recycling programs in the state.
That's right.
Dick, thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Dick. Appreciate
Good
it.
Good luck, Carl.
Nice hearing from you.
You bet.
261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Our guest, Carl Panasek, retiring at CAP Services in Stevens Point. He's done so much. His organization has done so much for so many people. We're going to be talking to him about the economy and what may lie ahead. and whether or not he has any reason to be optimistic with the change in administration in Washington right after this. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Our guest again, Carl Panasik. The phone number is 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Carl, we've got a new administration in Washington. We have one-party rule. We have a Senate which is very close to being filibuster-proof, if not quite there. I saw a recent poll. 68% of the population thinks, A, the economy is going to be better 4 years from now than it is now, and they are also very optimistic about the future. Do you share that optimism?
I do. I think that it's going to be a tough 2 years for the next 2 years, but I think after that we're going to see that spurt of growth and some of the changes that we are making in our economy, if we make the right choices, will spur a whole new level of economic development.
What do you think the president can do, given the fact that how much in debt are we right now?
More than could be paid by our generation, which is my generation is the baby boomers, the X generation, the Y generation, and our grandchildren. That's how much amount of debt that we're going to have.
Now, there's a big debate going on right now among pundits of various sorts about what President Obama should do. Should he be very conservative? Should he simply try to reduce spending and make sure that we get things under control in Washington? Or should he be bold and deliberative and maybe come up with something like a new deal, a new public works program, put people back to work, change America as we know it? And I'm going to play about a minute and a half here of Dave Obey on election night, because I asked him some of those questions. He is our congressman, and let's listen to his take on that. This is Dave Obey a week ago Tuesday.
Well, the important thing is to understand this country is in huge trouble. We're stuck in two wars, and when we're stuck with an economy that's rapidly declining, we've got to put together action on the job front almost immediately. We've got to deal with the health care problem. We have a whole list of problems on the plate, and I suspect you'll see Obama calling in leaders of both parties to try to find a way to get a consensus about how you move forward.
We have heard from some pundits that Mr. Obama has to be careful and the Democrats have to be careful not to move the country too far left too quickly. Your reaction to that thought?
Left, schmeft, up, down. I think all that talk is nonsense. We need action and action now on the job front. We need to deal with the health care problems. Some of the problems we have are very large problems, and they're fundamental. I don't think the public thinks in left or right terms. I think they think in terms of problem solving or ignoring problems, and we've got to get about problem solving.
How many trillions of dollars in debt are we right now?
Thanks to George Bush, it's about double what it was 8 years ago.
And isn't that going to constrain his options?
Of course it will. But that, I mean, you cannot approach this economy like Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover thought that you had to retrench and do less. This government is going to have to step up and stimulate the economy, or we will see unemployment go to record numbers. We just cannot allow that to happen.
Carl, Dave Obey seems to think that we need to stimulate the economy. We need to spend money if necessary in order to do that. But where is that money going to come from? You can't just keep printing money, can you?
Well, you got $85 billion a year if we pulled out of Iraq. Even if you increased Afghanistan by $10 billion, you're still coming out $75 billion to the good. You know, Iraq's sitting on $85 billion in their savings account right now. They don't really need us to help build that money. And the sad part about it is they got that $85 billion by selling us oil that Exxon was able to resell and make a ton of money on.
Some observers say we may even lose our AAA bond rating.
Well, I think that's a very definite possibility.
And what does that mean?
Well, then, of course, your U.S. Treasury notes that you sell to finance your debt, instead of paying 5.5 or 4.5 or 3.5, you can throw on another 100 basis points or 1% or 200 basis points, depending on how far down you go. Remember, bonds are AAA, AA, single A, triple B. So I think there's two things that could be done almost immediately. First of all the subsidies that we're using for oil production right now could be transferred over to subsidizing alternative energy. You could take $1 billion and you could stick it over in alternative energy and let the American free enterprise system start figuring out a way to make some of those projects.
This would be primarily for research, right?
Well, research, but research is fine, but you got to figure out a way to implement it. You know, because if you don't use it and sits on a shelf, that's crazy.
So this would be kind of a Manhattan style project.
That's what
the project that led to the development of the nuclear bomb.
And look at everything that's spun off of that. I mean, the whole magnetic resonance imaging was an outgrowth of atomic research. There's all kinds of things that have been happening as a result of that money that we invested in World War II. We're still seeing some of the benefits of it today. So I think that's, first of all, because if we can implement some of those alternative energy projects, it's a job creator. Second, our economy today, aside from suffering from a loss of jobs, also has a huge mismatch between the jobs that employers need and the skills that the workforce has. In Wautoma, as an example, we have a shortage of welders and machine operators. Now, these companies are primarily doing contract work for Oshkosh Truck or some of the larger manufacturers over in the Fox Cities. They subcontract a lot of their work out to smaller contractors. Those smaller contractors can't find the skills that they need among the workforce. So we have set up a training program for welders and machinists specifically to address that those companies' needs. Every welder that we've been able to a welding student that we've been able to graduate that wants to go into welding has found a job as a result. Every one of them, and that program's only been in existence a year.
Al Gore and Tom Friedman are both calling for a massive WPA-style push to green America. Gore is talking about laying solar panels in the desert southwest, using hydrothermal in areas where that are geographically or geologically conducive to that, rebuilding the entire energy infrastructure so we can get that energy from one place to another. Tom Friedman saying the power grid needs direct attention. Others are calling for massive public works projects, repairing bridges and highways and laying light rail. Do you honestly think any of this is possible given the economic situation we're facing?
I think there's two issues here. First of all, if you want to do something immediate, you've got to figure out what's in our power. Infrastructure is long term. It's going to take 3 years before even if they gave us the money tomorrow, it would take 3 years before the states could go through their local bidding process, the engineering studies, the architectural studies, the environmental studies. It's going to take 3 years. So you're going to see that money that goes into infrastructure primarily is not going to impact the job market for at least 2 years and maybe three, depending on whether you're willing to waive the regulatory, all the environmental and, environmental regulations.
So let's cut to the chase here because we're running out of time. What can we do?
Well, again, I think a massive job training program so that we start training people for the jobs that are available. That's number one. Number two, I think the putting the $1 billion into the alternative energy piece would start generating some benefit. We are this close, and I'm holding my fingers an inch apart. We are this close to making some of those alternative energy investments practical, even in Wisconsin. At the brewery that we are building in Amherst, we are putting huge solar panels on the roof because that solar panel will heat up the fermentation tanks for the beer production and reduce their energy losses by 30%. If solar works, the utilities are going to do it. They're not stupid. But it doesn't work right now because we don't have all the pieces designed yet. And we don't have, it's not a matter of not having the infrastructure to put it in. They're not cost effective.
Other big campaign promise, which affects, of course, those who are living in poverty, universal health care. Big campaign promise from Barack Obama. Do you think he'll be able to follow through?
I think he'll be able to do an increment. I don't think the whole thing will be able to be done in this 4 year period just because there's not enough money to do it. But he could do an increment. He could cover all children. He could say, okay, insurance companies, you insure the first 100,000, we'll insure everything over 100,000 as the government. It's not that expensive, but it would have a huge impact on health insurance costs.
Carl, what's in the future for CAP services?
Well, I think we're going to continue to move in the direction we've been going for the last 20 or 30 years.
You obviously have a lot of faith in your successor, Mary Patoka.
I have a great deal of faith. She's been with us for 14 years. She's been in training for 5, so I have no doubt at all she's going to not only do a better job, but she's going to far exceed everyone's expectations.
Carl, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Congratulations. It's been a great 32-year run with CAP Services, and I have a feeling we'll be hearing from you in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead.
I have far to go before I sleep.
Carl Panasik of CAP Services. We want to thank him and remind you that you can check out this vital local organization at its website, capserve.org. That's CAPSERV.org, or you can call them at 715-343-7500. That's 343-7500. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler. A special thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week, Route 51 gets off the highway and into the kitchen as we welcome Chef Ann Liebman with some favorite holiday recipes for Thanksgiving and Christmas. We invite you to call in and share your own recipes and traditions with us. Tell us about the special ways you celebrate the holidays and your favorite memories. That's it for us. Thanks for riding with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.